From deep within enemy country of St. Louis, Missouri, this is Stuart, and you're listening to the IVMD podcast brought to you by proud Patreon supporters like me, as long as I don't get caught. Go Cubs.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. This is our 397th episode. On this episode, we'll talk about the Cubs continuing their domination over the best teams in baseball. On our midweek episode, we talked about the Cubs sweeping the Pirates, and today it's the Cubs sweeping the Nationals. We will talk about the team as a whole and some of the individual performances. We'll check in on a few prospects in Iowa that we will likely see join the Cubs at some point this season. We have a couple of listener questions, some scary stats, and internet muscle flexes. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And this is Kurt.
If you have purchased Cubs or other tickets online, you'll know that it can be a frustrating process. It can be fairly complicated, and they try to sneak in huge fees when you check out. If that's been your experience, then you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to purchase sports and concert tickets. There are several Cubs games that I'm interested in this year, and SeatGeek is the first place I'm going to look for these tickets. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I can get alerts on the games that I'm interested in, and they let me know when the prices on the tickets go down. They have grades on the seat, so you can tell which are better deals, and they pull all the tickets from the other side, so it's really the only place you need to go. And best of all, SeatGeek is honest, and they're upfront with their pricing. The pricing you see when you're browsing is what you're going to pay, and they never surprise you with fees at the checkout. Listeners of our podcast get a $20 rebate on their first purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and then tap on add a promo code. Add the promo code IVY, I-V-Y in capital letters, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after your first purchase. It's easy and it saves you money. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code IVY today. Before we get started here, I want to wish all the moms out there listening a happy Mother's Day. Personally, I'd like to wish a happy Mother's Day to my mom and my wife, both who will be listening to this, a happy Mother's Day. And Beth, you know, Andy, your wife is in the live chat. Happy Mother's Day, Beth. And Kurt, I would imagine yes. Lana is off being a mom, I would assume.
Yeah, she's not in the live chat. She's, you know, doing what moms do upstairs, putting the boys to bed. So. Thanks, Lana, even though you'll never hear this.
And we couldn't do this without them. I mean, it's incredible what they do and what they put up with for us to be able to do this podcast. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely. So the Cubs, they faced two of the best teams in baseball this week, and they went 7-0. And I'm going to be honest. You know, like, after podcasting on the Cubs through some terrible years, terrible seasons, this is our eighth season of podcasting on the Cubs, and it's seriously tougher to come up with stuff to talk about this year because they're playing so well. I mean, what can we say? Oh, yeah, Arrieta's amazing. Hamill plays really well. He's looking good. So is Hendricks. Yeah, the offense is just punishing teams. Yep, thanks for listening.
I mean, the bullpen's been really good. I mean, yeah.
Might as well just draw a rainbow with a crayon and call it good. I got to tell you guys, my W flag is going to be in tatters.
Oh my gosh.
You tweeted something about that, Corey, about your W flag weathering the season.
Yeah, and I'm even like, I'm taking it down after, you know, like I like tomorrow morning I'll get up and I'll take it down. Like, I'm not leaving it up, you know, the entire time. And I'm trying to be a responsible, you know, superstitious Cubs fan to make sure I get it taken down.
Be responsibly superstitious. I actually had that question for you guys, is do you leave the W flag? You guys, those of you who fly the W, do you leave it up until game time, or do you take it down at the end of that day that they won on?
I don't have a flag. I have like a little thing I hang on my door. That's totally lame, I know. But like, usually no good place to apply a flag here. But take down usually before I leave for work that day, the following day of the win.
Okay, so some of the people in the chat were saying that they leave it up until the Cubs lose, but I typically leave my flag up until the start of the next game. Is that what you do, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, I try to, if they're playing at 1:20, if it's a home afternoon game or an afternoon game on the road, I try to take it down before I go to work. I'll leave it up overnight, and then I take it down before I go to work. Now, if it's like a weekend, like today I took it down right before the game started.
Yeah, that's
you know, on a weekend, I'll leave it up until the game starts, and then I take it down.
Yeah, I mean, not that it matters a whole lot. I'm not a very superstitious person, just in general. But I do typically take it up, you know, when I can, and take it down when I can before the next game starts. But
yeah, I wouldn't like. I've kind of thought about just leaving it up, especially this season. Like, it just seems like,
right, you're pretty safe. But I took it down today before the game. I was like, all right, I'll be putting you back up soon. I was like, kind of having like a little conversation with it. See, I mean, it's pretty one-sided.
I'll just set you right here next to the pool because I'm going to put you right back up.
You've named it Wilbur the W flag.
Wilbur. Wilbur, I'll be seeing you pretty soon, flapping in the breeze out there, won't I, Wilbur? It's Jake Day. It's Jake Day, Wilbur. You'll be back up soon.
Yeah, but mine has a hole in it right now, so I don't know whether, like, I kind of want to just, like, I was thinking I've had this one for a couple of years, but I was thinking, you know,
like, it's had a cannonball fly through, like, yeah. It's a pirate captain's flag or something.
I don't know, it must have got caught on something, you know, the wind really whips out here, so it must have got caught on like a nail on the deck or something like that. So I was thinking that maybe like this would be my 2015 and 2016 flag. I'll retire it at the end of the year, but I think it would be kind of neat, like at the end of the season, if it's kind of tattered and stuff. I mean,
right. Like it's like Francis Scott, the one, like the old glory that Francis Scott Key saw flying above Fort Sumter.
You can write a song about it.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a special flag, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, this is just, I mean, don't you guys think it's a little bit weird that, like, I'm kind of like, I guess I'm kind of having to change how I mentally prepare, or even, like, you know, prepare on paper for the podcast, because it's like, I mean, you could just spend an entire, like, again, this episode, do I need to talk about how awesome Javier Baez is? I mean, do I just, you know, it's like, it's just so bizarre that everything is, and I mean, there's a couple of, you know, there's a couple of things that you could kind of point out, or things aren't ideal, but my gosh, this team just freaking wins.
And we will talk about that stuff.
Right, yeah, there are a couple of things I'd like to talk about today.
But yeah, Corey, I thought you had a great tweet this week kind of talking about this, just how the feelings are different this year, about how, you know, we've been Cubs fans, you and I, since the mid-80s, you know, and we've never felt this way during a season. It's like, it's weird. It's a novel feeling that we've... we're having a hard time adjusting to a little bit.
Well, I think it's safe to say very few fans of any team have felt this way. I mean, 24 right. and 6. I mean, this happens once in a while, but
right,
not often.
Well, not since the 84 Tigers, I think, was the last team to start.
So,
do you guys? So, I mean, we kind of talked about superstitions with, you know, the flags and stuff like that. Like, part of me really feels like I just want to shed all of the Cubs fan cautious optimism, all that kind of stuff. Like I don't think this team, you know, is cautiously optimistic. And so I don't really feel like there's any reason for me to be cautiously optimistic. And I just feel like it's safe that, I mean, I'm not saying this team is like an 800 winning percentage team, but they're really freaking good. And like, what, according to, 538, they have a 97.1% chance to go to the playoffs. And I mean, I'm not saying like we should just like start talking playoff. Like, I don't know who should game three starter be, you know. I'm not like,
I don't know. I almost think that we should be in that mindset. I mean, I was telling Beth today, like, this is a playoff team. It's just, will they be playing the same level of baseball at the right time?
Right.
Know, kind of thing.
Yeah. But don't you, like, do you guys feel like there's no, like, we can, I think that we, because of the Cubs' past and the history, like, we feel like we can't be optimistic. We have to be cautiously optimistic. Like, it's just what we have to do. But other fan bases don't do that. And so, like, neither do Cubs fans this year. We do, like, we can be optimistic. We don't have to be waiting for the other foot to drop. We don't have to be waiting to be like, oh, well, if we say this, that would be, you know, if we leave our W flag out, oh, that's we're you know, it's like we're crossing the baseball gods or whatever. No, I mean, it's just.
I think if you're still in that mindset, it's just you'll never leave that mindset. And I think I go into every game now expecting to win. And I don't say that as a point of arrogance, like, oh, you know, Cubs are just going to win. It's just you get this vibe from this team that every day they have a chance to win. Obviously, you know, they're not they're more likely to win than lose. And if you're going to into every game watching as a fan expecting them to lose, then I really don't know what to tell you. You know, you should find a different hobby, a different thing to be interested in, because it's like you should be optimistic and this should be fun and exciting. And yeah, they're probably going to win, to be honest with you.
Right, and what snaps fans out of that pattern of thought, that rut, is going to be a pattern of success, and you know, you know, a few years of and you know, getting to the playoffs, being effective in the playoffs, et cetera. But it's gonna, since we've been admired so long, and you know, in these brutal seasons, it's gonna take a while to kind of shake them off.
Well, and it really is like kind of like part of the fabric of our being as Cubs fans. You know, it is. That is what being a Cubs fan is waiting for that, you know, left hook to like knock us out, you know, like when we least expect it, something terrible is going to happen. And this, I mean, again, this is not, I don't think that they're going to finish the season with an 800 winning percentage, but man, just enjoy it.
There will be some regression to the mean, to put it in a sort of,
except for if you look at the Pythagorean record.
They're supposed to be better, right?
Right. So
I'm not, they're actually unlucky. Ridiculous. What are they? They're supposed to be like two wins better.
Yeah, last time I saw the Pythagorean record was two wins better than what they are right now.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So this is a very unlucky Cubs team.
right. Well, and I mean, just this week, you know, I figured that the Cubs would go 4-3 this week. I would have believed that they would go 5-2 or maybe even 3-4. But this team just impresses me every day. And we've seen the Cubs go on tears in our years as Cubs fans, but I just can't remember witnessing anything like this. And all of this, and I think this is what I'm kind of trying to get to, is that all of this season so far has had a very unfluky feel to it because it's been so consistent. And that's what, like, any other time that the Cubs went on a tear, like, there was just always kind of that, like, that feeling of flukiness to it. And I just don't sense that at all this season.
I think that's what that Pythagorean record kind of points to, is
right,
that there are no flukes here. Like, they're winning these games, and by significant margins, other than today. And that points to, oh, they've actually been a little unlucky. And so
Right. Nobody
can point to a game and said, oh, if this call would have went this way, or
and
maybe this guy pitches one more inning of, you know, better, they would have won or lost. And that's just not happening. It's like decisively winning.
Right. Like if the Cubs would have not played the final four innings, they would have only won by two. Yeah. Specifically in the series against the Pirates, not necessarily this national series. I guess let's get into the national series. And I guess I kind of want to start off our discussion of this series with a general thought, and then you guys can jump in with overall thoughts on the series or individual players. But I want to talk about game three for a minute, which was Saturday's game. And I was a bit distracted by the game. Andy, you and I were actually able to watch it in the same location, which was nice. We were watching it during one of my daughter's birthday party. And when the game was tied, I think I should look, but I think it was in maybe like the seventh. I think the score was 5-5, seventh or eighth, somewhere in there. And both teams were in their bullpens, and almost kind of the same thing today. You know, the game was tied, teams are in their bullpens, and I have to admit, it's not specifically today, but more yesterday, it was maybe the most excited and the most confident I've been with the Cubs this season as they were tied late in the game. Really?
Wow,
well, yeah. We don't get to see close games very often. And here they were tied 5-5 with a team that's probably the second best team in the National League. And I was confident because at that point it was Joe Maddon versus Dusty Baker. And I knew that when it came to managing bullpens and managing their teams late in the game, Joe Maddon absolutely has the advantage over Dusty. And, you know, really, we kind of remember when the Cubs played the Giants last year, and I believe they swept them, and that was like kind of when everything clicked. It was after the Philly series. I don't remember how much after it was, but Maddon,
Yeah, it was close to the Philly series,
right? And so they had just been swept, and then they went out. I believe they went out to San Francisco. I think. Anyway, it doesn't matter. What it was at that point that Maddon said and started managing the team like the playoffs. And I think that Maddon continues to manage every game like it's a playoff game, and they want every single win. And it seems like we've seen a lot of Cubs teams, and I'm really assuming that this is throughout baseball, where throughout the season, especially in September, or except for in September, they you see teams kind of like play their game. You know, especially this time of year, teams just kind of go out and play their game. But even I think it was Len or JD today mentioned that like these teams today were playing like it was a playoff game, even though it's, you know, it's in May and there's so many games left. And this is just one of game of the season. But both of these teams wanted this game. And it seems like Joe Maddon isn't sending his team out to play their game. It feels like he's managing playoff games every single day.
Yeah, even though he's making some seemingly strange decisions at times, it just all he seems to always they always seem to work out. But yeah, I mean, they're recognizing the strength of their opponent and, you know, and rising to the occasion for sure.
And of course, he has a few advantages in his favor that, you know, his bullpen super rested is not overused. Other managers have to work around that, you know, and because the Cubs are playing so well, it sort of works to his advantage. But I think you're right that, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know what to say anymore. They're just so good. And Maddon is so good.
So, but I mean, how about stuff like having like Jason Hamill pinch hit, you know, and they just,
right.
He'll have pitchers pinch hit, and then it just seems to work out. You know, I mean, it seems like all his kind of seemingly oddball decisions seem to work out just fine.
Yeah, and it's I've kind of gotten to the point where I just don't even question Joe Maddon. Like he can pretty much do everything or anything, and I'm just like, well, he knows what he's doing. And you know, I mean, there's some things we kind of talked on last week's episode that like. It feels weird to me. Like, I kind of think that maybe platooning Soler isn't the best way to help him kind of work through this stuff. But to be honest, I trust Maddon, you know, like.
Right. Well, and Matt in the chat points out leaving Cahill in to hit today, too.
Right. Yeah.
And then he gets that big hit. Just it seems to work out, you know.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And
it is, but. He just I feel like he works on hunches a lot and then it just works. But
yeah, I mean, because it's not like
super good baseball mind. It's not like he's making bonehead decisions or anything like that, but he just goes with what he feels is the right to, you know, what his gut is telling him and his knowledge is telling him. It's like a combination of both.
Right. But I mean, even if you're looking, you know, if you have a lot of data at your disposal, I don't think there's much data on Cahill as a batter versus I don't even remember who he got that hit off of. Like, that's what's weird is some things I think he really does kind of rely on, you know, some of that data that's out there and that he has to use. But then some of it is, you're right, just like instincts and just hunches. And I don't know. It's so weird.
Sure. Well, and then, yeah, and it was huge to, for Kale to be able to get, did he get three innings today?
I believe so, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, so that was big for the Cubs. I mean, and, you know, that at-bat allowed that to happen.
Right, yeah. And that was, you know, even with being able to send up Travis Wood to hit, I mean, that's where it's really convenient to have some pitchers that can hit, even though, you know, Travis Wood hasn't gotten nearly the at-bats that he, you know, he has before. But really, I kind of assumed that we would see Travis Wood come in and get an at-bat at some point in this game, because it just kind of seemed like it could go on forever.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point, Corey, is that Maddon seems like really sharp at perceiving when a guy, like at an early stage, when a guy seems to be looking good swinging the bat or something like that. You know, for example, Jason Hamill, you know, a sub 200 career batter, but it seems like Maddon has recognized that, hey, the guy seems to be swinging the bat pretty well this season, you know, at an early stage in the season, and he's going with him, you know, because of that.
Right. Yeah. In this series, how about Ben Zobrist?
Yeah, he's been wild. I mean, this is kind of my scary stat. So I'm just, I don't like when the scary stat kind of throws a wrench into mid podcast conversation. So I'm just going to throw it out there now.
Well, I've got a scary stat later anyway. So
yeah, I noticed that too. So I felt good putting it in now. But today he was just 1-for-4 with 2 walks. But in this 7-game stretch.
That's a weak performance from Zobrist. No,
come on, Ben. But he's at 25 at-bats and 9 hits. So he actually did lower his batting average from like 380 to 360 today. His OBP is somewhere in the 450 range. I didn't get an exact number because some of the stats pages are a little slow to reload after the game finishes. But it's around 450. And in this streak, he's had 4 home runs, 15 RBI, 5 walks, and just 2 strikeouts. So, I mean, he sees the ball so well. You can see when a guy's at the plate, you can just kind of tell that he's seeing the ball well. Like, he's not swinging at bad pitches. He's choosing the pitch he wants to hit. He just looks so good, and he's driving the ball. The home runs have just looked so good. I can't remember which one it was, but he just rocketed out. I know. This is kind of like falls in everything else. Like, what else is there to say about Zobrist in this 7-game stretch other than he's been incredible?
Yeah, and holding his own and on defense too. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, don't forget, how old is the guy? Like 35 or 34? I don't remember exactly how old he is, but I mean, he looks pretty good on defense too. So just such a, I don't know, such a good pickup for the Cubs this offseason.
Thinking in terms of Mother's Day, he can never change his walk-up music. That'd be, or he might be in the doghouse. I mean, that kind of stinks, right? Right. Like to have the flexibility to be able to change your walk-up music every once in a while.
No.
That was great analysis from me right there.
I don't even know what it is. So
it's wondering. His wife.
Oh.
Well, okay, so let me talk. I mean, there is a negative thing I want to talk about, but I do want to talk about one other positive thing, and that's Rondon's performance so far this year. And again, this is something else that could be a scary stat. Okay, without looking, guys, what would you guess is Hector Rondon's FIP this year, which is basically, you know, ERA taking out fielding, essentially. That's what it is.
Well, can you tell us what his ERA is?
Hold on a second. Yes, I can, but hold on a second.
I can't.
I don't have it pulled up, but since you requested it.
I'm going to take a while.
I was just saying that would be, you know, a bad guess if I put the FIP.
I'm
going
to take a wild guess.
Okay, so his ERA is...
Can I make a wild guess?
Yeah, yeah, hold on a second. His ERA.
Okay.
You want his ERA?
Yeah, no, sure.
Okay. No. His ERA is 0.79.
Okay. All right.
So I'm guessing the FIP is better than that.
So. Okay, I'm going to guess for FIP. Yeah, it's got to be better, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say it even goes into the negative. I'm going to say 0.10. That's my guess.
Well, now it's going to go like 0.25 or something crazy like that. But You're probably right, Andy. It's probably Nate.
Yeah, you're probably right because you must have his Fangraphs page pulled up because that's exactly what it is. You're so full of it.
What is it?
It's -0.1. His FIP is negative.
How does that, my brain's not wrapping around how FIP is calculated, but how do you get a negative?
I'm not sure. I don't know how you get a negative FIP. And I think that maybe you might have some. I honestly don't know. But he has a negative FIP.
So, oh boy, never mind. I'm not even going to dig into it because I'm going to sound dumb. But
no, I honestly don't know how you get a negative FIP. I don't know. If there's anybody in the chat room, I'm sure somebody listening to this is like, obviously, guys, this is how. Well, obviously, you get a negative FIP by doing whatever he did. He's done. And so he's pitched in 11 and one-thirds innings. He's given up 4 hits, 18 strikeouts, and no walks. 18 strikeouts.
Ben Lindbergh is listening. He's like, oh my God, you're so stupid. I'm sorry. 18 strikeouts and no walks.
And no walks, said? Yeah. So he's pitched in 12 games, but only 6 saves because the Cubs really haven't given him many save opportunities, considering how many runs they've scored and how few runs they've allowed. But yeah, I just wanted to give Rondon a few seconds on this episode because we just haven't really talked much about him this season, but he's been so impressive. And I mean, when he does have a save opportunity, he just locks stuff down. I mean, there's no, he looks really good.
Yeah. And it's nice to see too, because he hasn't gotten regular save opportunities. So
right.
That is kind of nice to see him keep coming out kind of irregularly and still perform.
Well, a lot of times you see closers come out in non-closing situations and kind of struggle. But not the case for Rondon.
So Hayward has continued to struggle in this series. He was 3-for-16 in the entire Nationals series. And that was with a 2-for-5 performance today. So today's game was actually a little bit better than he's done in the over the course of the series. So his slash line now is looking pretty rough. I mean, he's at .212 batting average, .317 OBP, .260 slugging, and .576 OPS. So I don't know. They've talked on the broadcast about how he's trying to the Cubs are trying to work with him on being able to sort of get a little bit of more of his home run swing going, because it seems like a guy with his frame should be hitting more homers. He still is driving the ball pretty well. His line drive percentage is above average. His fly ball percentage is below average, and the BABIP is still low. So you got to expect, you know, things are going to get on track for him, but he's been tough. You know, he's been kind of just scuffling up there. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Now it's important to keep in mind, slow starts to seasons have been kind of the norm for Hayward. And you know, some of the kind of just peripheral numbers have suggested, you know, I don't know, have shown good trends for him. He's not really swinging at pitches outside the zone. He's only swinging at 23.6% of pitches outside the zone, and 30% is average. Let's see, other things. I guess like his walk percentage, walk rate is pretty good. He's at 13% there. I mean, hence the .317 OBP to go with that .212 average.
Yeah.
But I guess the bottom line with the whole thing is his presence in the lineup isn't really hurting the team. You know, he's been killing it on defense, and he's been helping to drive up pitch counts. He's still seeing a lot of pitches per at bat. So I think, you know, it's okay for him to kind of work through it, because it doesn't seem to really be that detrimental to the overall success of the team.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously we now know that there was a wrist issue at some point, and I'm not, you know, it's possible that's not completely healed. That might be impacting him a little bit at the plate. So I think there's that. But then also, I mean, there have been times, especially early in the season, where he was hitting the ball really hard and he was getting good contact, and he was just getting unlucky. And I mean, like, I, what the base hit that he had today in extra innings, I don't remember what inning it was, where he eventually got thrown out at home. Like, that was, that to me looked like the Hayward that I watched play with the Cardinals and with the Braves, you know, that just got up there and was one of those guys that you just knew. You know, I hated when the Cubs faced him because it just seemed like he could and did do damage at almost every at bat. And so, like, I thought that was like a nice little glimpse of like the Hayward that we kind of thought that we were going to get. And I think he will become again, is mm-hmm. just that he's so consistent, you know, has been in the past. And that was very typical, a very typical Hayward at bat, was just that line drive just out of the reach of the second baseman. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to see a ton of power from him. I mean, he hasn't had much. He didn't have much last year, so I don't know. But if he can just be that, like you said, that guy that drives up pitch counts, that sees a lot of pitches, that takes walks, and when he needs to, comes through with that line drive. I mean, that's valuable. And when you look at the entire package of what this team is, that's a nice role to have filled too, because there's guys that can do just about everything.
Right, and all the time, and all the while, still playing almost flawless defense too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think defense is so undervalued in today's game, and people are so quick to look at the guy's batting average and say, "Well, he's not contributing," but him in the lineup is still a plus.
Oh yeah,
even when he's struggling, because he'll turn it around, like we've talked about. And I mean, defensively, he's so good that, you know, I can't quote you any numbers that can say how much better he is, but. Yeah, he's incredible defensively, and just his presence in the lineup. Yeah, he's going to drive the ball, and maybe he gets a little bit unlucky, but he's going to see a handful of pitches and still drive the ball, and eventually they're going to start falling in.
Yeah, and I think we also have to consider the fact that he was, you know, a big money free agent. And look at last year, when right after Lester got signed, and he came in and you know, recently, you know, this offseason and in this season, he's kind of admitted that he maybe put some extra pressure on himself because of that dollar amount, that paycheck. And Hayward could be going through the same type of thing right now, where you feel like the team spent that much money on you, and all of a sudden you need to be this, you know, the guy that's worth that much money, instead of just doing what you've done all along that resulted in you earning that paycheck. So
that's a good point, man. I'd never really thought about making that comparison, but it's pretty apt, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and again, we just don't know how much the injury, the wrist, plays a role too. I mean, there's just so much we don't know. And so we watch. That's what we do.
But again, it's a great luxury to have to have a guy with this kind of money sort of be able to struggle and not have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still winning games. Everybody else is contributing. And that's really what a good lineup does, is lets guys go through their struggles. And later in the year, when somebody else is struggling, hopefully he turns it around and he's the guy who we're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Right. For example, Dexter. I mean, I was like, I came in, you know, from Mother's Day festivities, and it was like bottom of the first. Oh yeah, of course Dexter's on already.
right. Yeah.
And he even kind of had the slight slump there, and then he just today was good again. And yeah, it looks like he might start sort of regressing a bit, and then he's like, oh wait, no, hold on.
Give me another series. Anything else you guys want to talk about with this National series?
Things. Go ahead, Kurt.
I'm going to let you go ahead. I have like sort of an overall comment of like, I texted this to you guys, like what it must feel like to be a Nationals fan. You know, like you thought you had it today, perhaps at one point, and then they tied it, and you're like, man, I think we can still pull this off. We got extras, and then just it's so demoralizing to play the Cubs. And I can just sort of put myself in the shoes of being a fan of some of these other teams.
That's a good point.
how annoying it must be. To see the Cubs be this great, but I love it. I am not going to apologize for it. I think it's awesome. And, you know, don't expect me to be like, sorry, Nationals. But, you know, they're just that good. And I'm loving every second of it. And mm-hmm. I feel a little bit bad for you, but, you know, better luck next time.
Like Kevin in the chat says, we've been there before, Kurt. Is like, we can empathize with anyone like this season. And then we're having a fully, like a completely novel experience feeling-wise as, you know, being Cubs fans this season. But anybody else we play and we bury, like the Nationals and the Pirates, like we can totally empathize with what their fans are feeling at the moment.
Well, in some of the conversation about the Cubs having not played great teams, well, they just played the Pirates and the Nationals right. and swept.
Right, that's a huge... Exactly. I mean, like, that was the question is, okay, they've... Okay, so they played the Brewers and, you know...
The Reds. You
know, whatever, and the Diamondbacks and crap like that. But can they put up runs against the Nationals and the Pirates? Well, the Cubs put up 25 runs in the four-game series against the Nationals, so they can put up runs on anybody, I think, you know. I mean, just look at the Scherzer game where they hit four home runs against Scherzer. This team can put up a lot of runs on anyone.
Well, Kurt, you kind of mentioned, like, you know, putting yourself in the position of a Nationals fan. I mean, think about it. Like, we talk about the Pirates, how they endured this rebuild that took so much longer than the Cubs rebuild. And then they had to deal with a really good Cardinals team at the front end of them being good. And now they're having to deal with the Cubs being really good. And, you know, they got into the play-in game a couple times and got beat. And it's like, how frustrating must that be for Pirates fans that, like, it just the timing was terrible. But then think about the Nationals. The Nationals had all the hype last year. They were supposed to be so good. They didn't even make the playoffs, had a pretty bad season. And now this year they're off to a good start, and it's like, okay, they're going to have to go into Chicago and play, you know, a team they very well could face in the playoffs, and they got swept 4-0. I mean, that would have to be demoralizing.
Yeah, and for the most part, the pitching matchups looked at, if not favorable, at least fairly even.
Yeah, right.
For a 4-game series, and they just got...
Well, in several cases recently, the pitching matchups have looked very favorable for the opponent.
Right.
You know, for example, like at the bar last night with some friends, and we saw a guy in a Garrett Cole jersey sitting at the bar, and I was like, think about that game. I mean, we had Hamill going against Cole, and you had to be thinking, well, that's going to be a tough game on the Cubs, and Hamill out-dueled Cole. And then we have Scherzer against... Who pitched in that game against Scherzer?
Was that Lackey?
Well, it was Lackey, yeah. So Lackey pitched really well against Scherzer, and so the rotation is killing it.
Yeah. Well, and if you want to talk about frustration from a Nationals fan perspective, today the Nationals left 40 men on base. Oh, Zimmerman
today in this one game.
Zimmerman alone left 14 on base. Whoa.
Well, you know, that's kind of funny because, you know, you watch these, Zimmerman.
Could you imagine looking at your looking at the box score afterwards, and next to your name it says 14 LOP?
Oh my gosh, man. Oh my gosh, it does. 14 LOBs. Harper was intentionally walked six. Was it he intentionally walked six times? It couldn't have all been intentional.
No, they weren't all intentional.
Okay, but he was walked six times.
Some of them may have been semi-intentional, but I don't mind that game plan. You don't let Harper beat you, and that's what they did.
What were you going to say, Kurt? We kind of interrupted you.
Sorry about that, Kurt.
I honestly don't remember.
Sorry.
Thanks. I had the most amazing thing I've ever had to say.
You stomped on your...
Yeah, no, it probably wasn't that good.
Anybody in the chat, if you want to be entertained, just Google image shirts Washington Nationals without the O. I just like to remind myself about the time they wore the jerseys without the O. It's good to remind yourself of that every once in a while. A couple other things about the series I just wanted to note. Lackey got his 2,000th strikeout in that game against Max Scherzer. And, you know, I think he's been good for the Cubs overall this season.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Other than that, like, role players are coming through. I wanted to give some kudos to Kalish, you know, for that 2-run single in game 3. We've talked about the bench already being strong, and their play has been strong this year. And it just continues to, they just continue to come through for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was great to see the bench, the dugout kind of go nuts when he got that hit. That was kind of cool. And they really sort of gave him the applause he deserved. You know, role players like that don't get credit at the end of the season, but, you know, he helped him get the win in that particular game. So it all adds up.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the bullpen too. I mean, they pitched 8 innings without giving up a run today. And that's pretty impressive. Although I do want to take a second to get negative. I think you guys know where I'm going.
Are you
going to
tell us how terrible Jake Arrieta is?
right. No. But I do want to kind of harp on a pitcher a little bit. Okay, yes, this team is 24-6. So we have no reason to get negative. But I believe a few weeks ago, I think I expressed this opinion in our group text. I think I said it, that I've really lost all confidence in Travis Wood. And he's pitched in 14 games, 8 innings pitched, and he has an ERA of 5.63. He's walking a lot of guys, 4.5 per 9 innings. That's one more than last year. He's also giving up, these stats are from before today's game, when he pitched an inning. But even in today's inning, so he's given up, 2.25 home runs per 9 innings, and small sample size. Sure. I mean, 8 innings pitched, but 2/3 of his pitches that are hit are hard contact, and his soft contact rate is under 5%. And so I think, you know, and you look at today, like I said in our group text today, that Travis Wood was good for this, like the 2013 Cubs, because he gave up runs, but then sometimes he didn't, you know, but he still, like when he didn't give up runs, he usually left the, you know, a couple guys on base and stuff. And then you'd be like, oh, he worked his way out of it, you know, and you kind of liked that about him. But he's just, it seems like that's going to catch up with you, leaving, you know, allowing guys to get on base, walking that many guys and giving up home runs. I mean, it's just going to catch up with you. And so if you're not yet convinced that Travis has not been impressive this year, Fangraphs has a statistical category named called meltdowns. And Wood has had 2 meltdowns this year, and that's compared to 4 all last season. So yeah, I don't know where he stands as far as leading the league in meltdowns, but he's had 2 this year.
Well, okay, I was thinking about this, and I thought you guys were a little bit too harsh on him.
But don't say you guys. I wasn't even part of this conversation, well, Andrew.
I thought you kind of agreed with Corey at least once when it's come up, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
You are.
But anyway, I was kind of just like defending him today for kicks, and Corey felt the need to like prove me wrong, even though I was just sort of trolling you guys. Maybe he is the guy that should only be facing, you know, like a loogie, should only be facing like one batter, basically.
Yeah, except I don't really trust him in that situation either. Like, I kind of see him as my ideal role for him. If he's on the Cubs, I want him to come in when the Cubs are up 9-1, or like if a pitcher, if a game is out of hand or a game is very in hand, like that's when I want to see him. I just, you know, he's throwing his fastball more this year than he has in the past. And I mean, it's an 89-90 mile an hour fastball, and it's just not fooling anybody. It's pretty straight. And when his control, he's the kind of guy I think that needs to be able to work the corners and really work the strike zone to get outs. And I just feel like maybe his command is a little bit off. He's very hittable. You know, and I mean, you can look at like, oh, yeah, OK, he pitched OK today. Well, he kind of did, except for he left 2 guys on. And I mean, you can't go out there and not allow any base runners ever. I understand that. But like I said, it's going to catch up with you if you allow a couple guys on every appearance and every inning you pitch, it's going to catch up with you.
Right. And as far as left-handed pitchers, I feel more confidence in Clayton Richard than I do in Wood, and people in the chat are pointing out they have a lot of good options as far as sort of like similar situational type bullpen guys to Travis Wood in, you know, like Cahill and Warren, for example.
Yeah, Warren's been awesome this year, I think.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed watching him pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he just gave up his first earned run the other day, so.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. But as far as Wood goes, though, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. It's just hard for me to hate on a guy who's kind of been here through the garbage.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You know, and he started then, and you know, got transitioned to the bullpen. I can't disagree with what you're saying, and I think he's probably been exposed for what he is. But at the same time, you know, it's hard for me to hate on him. But then I think there's also perhaps, I'm just speculating here, maybe he's being a bit overly aggressive because he can. He's pitching in situations where, maybe other than today, but you know, he comes in with a lead, and
yeah,
maybe he's dishing something a little bit too easy to hit. But I don't know. I'm just trying to defend him when I really don't have a whole lot to stand on, other than I hope he does turn around the performance. But I don't know. It's hard for me to dislike him just because of he's been around for a while and. He's kind of lived through the garbage.
He did, right? Yeah. We have some listener questions later in the show, but while we're on the topic of pitching, and since we saw Hendricks pitch in the series, we got an email from Jason in New York City. Kurt, do you want to read that email? Talk about this?
Sure. Yeah, Jason says, with so many positive things to say about the Cubs, ain't it great? I hope you spend a few minutes talking about Kyle Hendricks. He could have had 4 of 5 quality starts this season if not pulled early against the Brewers. He has the lowest walk per 9 innings rate of any Cubs pitcher who has issued a walk. That and improved changeup have had a lot to do with it. Not bad for a fifth starter and an important part of having a long win streak against the next 2 best teams in the NL. And I think he pretty much summed it up. Right there in the email. So, I mean, there's not a lot to argue with there. Hendricks has been great as a number 5. I think another kind of cool stat for Hendricks is that that was his 50th start last time out. And the Cubs record in Hendricks starts is 33-17 in his 50 starts. So, you know, that's not his record. He's not had that many decisions in his favor, but the Cubs have won 33 of his 50 starts. So that's pretty impressive. You know, and what more can you ask from a number 5 starter is that he keeps you in the ball game. You know, he goes 4, 5, 6 innings, whatever he can throw out there that day. Keeps you in the game, and then your offense, you know, pulls through. And I think Hendricks really kind of turned it around late last year. August, September were really good for him. Him and Bazio worked on a few things where he kind of changed his mechanics a little bit, so he wasn't so squatty. Corey kind of says this a lot. I'm not a scout, and neither am I. I'm quoting a lot of what I read. So he changed his delivery to be less like down, and I think that's helped his consistency. And so a guy like Hendricks, who tops out at like 89, 90, has to hit his spots, and that's what he's doing more consistently this year. And I think that's what's really helped him improve, because what he's throwing and his movement, all that kind of stuff is pretty consistent to what he's always been. He's just hitting his spots more. So he's getting more called strikes on balls that he wasn't getting before. And I think that's the greatest change. And so, I mean, He's awesome as a number 5.
Yeah, if you can have your number 5 pitching like a number 3, that's good. And
and I also think something Madden said a lot is that his preparation is probably greater than any other pitcher. I mean, his study and his film, you know, he's an Ivy League guy, so he goes into every game prepared. And so if he doesn't perform well, at least he can blame his physical performance and not his preparation.
Right. Yeah. Well, we haven't talked too much about the minor league system this year, but with all of the Cubs bumps and bruises, you know, I've kind of seen some Cubs fans wondering if the Cubs might call up some of the prospects that we expect to see later in the season. So I thought this might be a good time to check in on a couple of guys in Iowa, Albert Almora and Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, Almora's been good. He was 2 for 5 in today's game, and and his average currently is, I'm sorry, his slash line currently is, he's hitting .318 with a .348 on base percentage, a .458 slugging percentage, and .806 OPS. He isn't walking a lot, but he's really cut down on strikeouts, it seems like. His K rate is only 11%. And the OBP isn't great. It's a little above average, but the average is kind of what stands out, you know, in that slash line there, hitting .318. So he's done well so far. I mean, and that's always been the question about him is, you know, is his offense going to be major league viable? You know, his defense is there. It's good. And so far this season, I mean, the bat seems like it's there for Almora.
Yeah, and I think we've said this before, but I really look forward to, you know, hopefully the Cubs being able to pull him up in August or September. And I mean, what a defensive substitution to have in a tight game. I mean, he is so good in the field. And I mean, the Cubs, you know, when you looked at like Schwarber, it's, you know, before the Fowler signing, when you looked at Schwarber, Soler and Hayward, you know, it was like, it's a good thing Hayward can play center field and hopefully, you know, perform close to, you know, gold glove worthy defense. But now you look at what this defense, what the outfield could be defensively at the end of this season, and they could have a superb defensive outfield.
Yeah, and it's kind of a nice contrast to see a sort of defensive first player developing his offense versus what we've been used to as a sort of offensive heavy prospect who's working on his defense. And you know, everybody raves about Almora's defense.
Yep. And how about Contreras?
Contreras. I mean, this is the kind of guy who's like offensively has really jumped up in the last couple of years. I mean, his last year with Tennessee was pretty fantastic. I don't know the numbers exactly, but he hit over 300. It was nice to see him continue that this year with Iowa. So far, he's hitting .349. He's got 2 home runs and 13 RBI. The plate discipline's been really good. He's got 14 walks, so his OPP is up to .452. Today, he was 2-for-3 with an RBI as a DH. So really, the offense is kind of holding to what we saw as a big boom last year in Tennessee. You know, the defense, I think every catcher is always going to be working on defense, but any kind of catcher prospect who can handle the bat that well is always going to be super valuable, and that's what he's shown so far in Iowa. So, I mean, he's kind of holding true to what we expected, and he's had a hot start so far. Maybe he'll cool down a little bit, but so far so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean, it's really nice to see him performing that well, given that like if something did happen long-term to, you know, an injury or something to, or a trade or something that would, you know, to Montero or maybe even Ross. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really nice to see him performing. It'd be, you'd feel a little bit more nervous if he was hitting like .220 or something, you know. And so it's good to see these guys performing well in Iowa, especially offensively. We have some listener questions. This first one comes from Brian from Portland, Oregon, and he says, if all things were equal and salary wasn't a consideration, would you trade Joe Maddon to the Nationals for Dusty Baker and Bryce Harper? I know it's a ludicrous question, but it ultimately assesses how much you value Maddon. Do you guys have
any ludicrous? I love ludicrous questions. I'll say that to start, but no way.
Well,
yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
and that's me understanding that Bryce Harper is like, you know, one of the best players in the game. I get it. I'm not trying to undercut how good he is, but. No,
I spent a lot of time on this.
I don't want Dusty
managing
this team.
Right. I spent a lot of time on this question. So you guys want me to go through kind of my mental breakdown of this question and how I came to my answer?
Because we know how much you love Dusty, so I would love to hear it.
Well, okay. Yeah. So here's how I chose to value manager or to determine manager value. I thought, okay, let's look at the difference between the Pythagorean record, which is, you know, what the team's record should be based on runs scored and runs against, the runs they gave up. And so in 2015, the Cubs won 97 games. According to their Pythagorean record, they should have won 90. So I'm going to value Joe Maddon as 7 wins. He had a 7-win season last year. Last season, Bryce Harper was a 9.5 win player. So if we're going to use that method of evaluation and the 2015 results, I think, you know, maybe you should take that trade. But, you know, that's if it's Harper for Maddon. But this includes Dusty Baker. And, okay, so Dusty didn't manage in 2015 or 2014. So I didn't want to go back and look through, like, the Pythagorean records of all of the teams he's managed or all the teams that Joe Maddon managed. So I looked at just the last season that they managed. So in 2013, Dusty managed the Reds. They won 90 games. According to their Pythagorean record, they should have won 93. So Dusty was a negative 3 win manager. So in this formula, Dusty plus Bryce Harper, that's 6.5 wins, and Maddon was 7 wins. So that's how I justified the opinion that I had before I even looked into any of this, is that I would rather have Joe Maddon. And but eventually, the Cubs could have both Maddon and Harper. It's possible.
They could. They dole out some cash. But I think that's also ignoring, like, in what Maddon does for other players. And I suppose that's calculated into the 7 wins you gave him last year versus the Pythagorean record. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. Think about this clubhouse with
Dust
there. And, you know, it's just,
right.
You know, how do any of these young players perform? I don't even like to think about it.
No, I mean, that's where, like, my gut instinct was no way. But then I thought, okay, well, let me actually, like, look into this.
Let's actually think about this.
Let's be a little
I like
more,
Lauren's comment in the chat. She says, Theo would find a way to make that trade, get Joe back, and somehow make Dusty go to the Orioles.
It's probably true.
So I think we can all three agree, and I'm going to guess all 33 live viewers right now will all agree that we would stick with Joe Maddon, I think.
Yeah, but Bryce Harper's real good.
I know, I know. It's not like
real good.
real good.
Okay, next question is from Northern New Jersey. Josh, sorry. From Northern New Jersey, he asked, do you think the Cubs should get another pitcher? So I guess he's saying, you know, at the trade deadline, do you think the Cubs should go get another arm? Let's say he didn't say, I'm assuming he means starting pitcher. But what do you guys think?
I'm going to say no at this point, considering that they would have to give up something to get that. If you need another starter, I think a guy like Warren could transition,
or Cahill. Right. I mean, they have a number of guys on the big league roster right now that could be stretched out, but in Iowa there's not a lot of guys looking like they could, you know, get the call and be an effective big league pitcher right away. I don't know, so I would say no. But I mean, with that being said, I look at Iowa and am a little bit concerned.
I think that if they can get the guy that they want, then sure. You know, if they've got somebody, or if there's an injury between now and then, you know, if I think if there's an injury between now and then, yeah, I think you do. And I think if they can get one of the, you know, probably top 5 guys that they have their eyes on, you know, and there's the other team is out of it and needs to make a trade and start restocking their system, then I think you do. And because I think, like, you know, this Cubs team has been absolutely amazing. And I think that the Cubs aren't going to let this season get derailed. I mean, look at, there have been other teams that on paper should have been good and it didn't turn out. Well, this is so far turning out. And all signs point to it turning out for the next, you know, 3 or 4 months. So I think like you just go for it. You know, this is, I'm not saying you sell off the farm or anything like that, mm-hmm. but you know, look at like, I mean, there's Vogelbach, you know, if there are guys down there that there is not a clear path to.
Are you saying he's Vogelbach's going to pitch?
right. there's a clear path. There's no clear path to the majors or to the Cubs for some guys. And so, I mean, use them. And I think if they can get the right guys, then go for it. If you can get like a number two, if you can get an ace or a number two, number three guy, and you can get them at a price that works, and you know, as far as the trade goes and everything, then I'm all for it.
I think it too depends on kind of how you word this question. Like, should they? We assume that means you're going to trade somebody. And I think, will they? Yes, they will. I mean, look at what they did last year with Soriano. They signed Rodney. They got a lot of guys who underperformed or who are at the end of their careers who they could bring in at a really low-risk investment, try to turn them around. And if you do enough of those, somebody's going to work out. And I think they'll continue to do that. I don't see Theo and Judd sitting around being like, hey, look, we did it. We're all set.
Right.
Like, nothing more to do here. I mean, they're still looking at who they can sign, who they can maybe get for a steal, bring in, hopefully they perform. And that's still going to happen. So I don't think my answer is saying no, they shouldn't, isn't saying they aren't going to continue to do that. I'm just saying, no, they shouldn't make a big blockbuster deal to try to get another starter or something.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of disagree with you, but...
You disagree with me
in a way. I mean, if it's there, I think they should.
Oh, you think they should? I guess if it means getting it done this year, I'd be okay with it. It's just hard for me to look at this team now and say you should be looking for big deals to make.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll
at the trade deadline, maybe we can have this discussion again.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Kurt, you kind of already used up your scary stat of the week, right?
Yeah. I'm giving it to Zobrist.
Okay. So here's mine. I'm going to kind of go back to the well that we've visited so often already this season, the run differential. So right now the Cubs run differential is 102, and that run differential is better than the number two and number three teams combined. And that would be the Mets and Nationals. Not only is it better, but again, the Cubs have 102 and those two teams combined have 84. So a pretty large distance there.
Wow.
And actually, they're better than the Mets, National, you know, if you think about the three of the top teams in the National League, the Mets, Nationals, and Pirates, they're better than all three of those teams combined. And that total comes to 92. They're still 10 runs better than those three teams combined. And if the Cubs had a run differential of 102 last year, what they have right now, they would have, so right now, the first, what are we, 5-6 weeks into the season, that amount of, you know, how do I word this? These 5 or 6 weeks, their 102 run differential would have finished fourth in all of baseball last season. For the entire season, they would have finished ahead of the Pirates last season.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. That's sick.
Yep. So that's the scary.
Doesn't it feel like a disappointment if they don't score like 7 or 8?
It's bizarre. That's for sure. But it's nice to see them score, you know, like 4 today and still get a win. And I'll be honest, like today, I really enjoyed seeing like an extra innings game. And it was enjoyable to watch a close game and to watch them have to come back. And I mean, like, these are things that we haven't been able to see much this year. These are the things that, like, those are the situations that get you real in years past have gotten us really excited about the Cubs. Extra innings wins, walk-off wins are a ton of fun. And even though what we've witnessed already has been a ton of fun, I kind of like seeing these things every once in a while. Like, I still want to see a walk-off win, you know, like
especially when you're playing with house money. It's like you've already taken three games.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, yeah, let's just let it all let it ride.
Yeah. Yep. Do you guys have any internet muscle flexes this week?
I don't.
I have one. I don't know if it qualifies as a muscle flex, but I enjoyed this little thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, shoot. Did I lose it? I think I lost it. Fudge, man. Lost it. I did. I totally lost it.
All right. Well, I have one, so I'll just go ahead and do it. So this one was sent in from one of our Twitter followers, Matthew. He's at Matthew Warwick. And so for Mother's Day, Dexter Fowler had tweeted something. And then I think he had a follow-up tweet, and it was so his follow-up tweet was hashtag don't mess with my mama. And someone responded to him and said, at Dexter Fowler, focus on winning, not hashtags. Shouldn't be losing to teams like the Braves.
What?
Oh, I love it.
Goodness gracious, man.
You're 24-6. Shouldn't be losing to teams like the Braves.
Too much focus on hashtags.
Because a dude with like an OBP of like what 470 or something, he's definitely focusing on hashtags too much.
Oh my goodness.
He'd be like he'd be probably over 500 OBP if he didn't.
Right. If he didn't use hashtags.
Goodness gracious.
Oh gosh. Man. All right. Andy, did you ever find your muscle flex? Or is it a goner?
It's a goner, but it was just like on the post of wishing moms a happy Mother's Day, and then this guy asking a question that just totally had nothing to do with the topic. So I enjoyed that, but I lost it.
All right. So that does it for this episode, which was made possible by all of our Patreon supporters. We have three new folks that jumped on the Patreon campaign this week. Benjamin from Pike Road, Alabama. And when I saw Pike Road, I assumed Benjamin left out the town's name, that was the road he lived on. No, it is a town. It's a town of about 300, according to Wikipedia, if you're interested. And also Jan from Brno, which is in the Czech Republic. So in the last month, we've added Aruba, South Africa, the Czech Republic, and I just think the world tour thing needs to happen now, guys. It's time to do it. And also Kat from Elk City, Oklahoma. So thanks to Benjamin, Jan, and Kat for jumping on this week. Patreon is how we pay the podcasting bills. We pay for equipment upgrades and for our live events. If you enjoy what we do, and if you like getting two episodes a week of Cubs Talk during the season and one episode a week in the off season, check out our Patreon campaign. You can get perks like stickers, posters, and even IVMV pint glasses. So go to patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV, or you can go to IVMV.com and click on the Patreon link on the right side of the page. So we will be back on Wednesday night to talk about the Cubs series at Wrigley with the Padres. Thank you for listening, and until Wednesday, go Cubs.
Hi, this is Adam from Port Orchard, Washington. Saw your question on Facebook as to what has surprised me the most about this Cubs team. Would have to say Jake Arrieta's continued dominance. It's kind of weird because it feels like every time he comes out, you just expect Jake with an exclamation point. And the thing is, it's just when you look at the numbers and how truly historic his run is, it's really amazing. And I think when you look in the context of things, really surprising that he's able to keep it up. So here's to him doing that and the rest of the team as well. Great rest of the season. You guys keep up the great work. Never miss an episode. And listen to you later. Have a good day.
Hey, this is Josh from Monroe, Louisiana, and the host of the 318 Now podcast. And I can speak on behalf of Cub Nation that we're all pleasantly surprised with a start to the Cubs 2016 season. I would say the biggest surprise for me so far has been Dexter Fowler's hot start. He's amongst the league leaders in WAR and has provided stability atop the Cubs lineup. And also, I got to throw in Grandpa Ross, David Ross. In just 40 at-bats, he has already surpassed his home run total from 2015, and he's providing great defensive play behind the plate. So I would say those are my surprises for the 2016 season so far. Go Cubs, go.
Hey, everybody. It's Adam from Hanson, Virginia. And the question was, what surprises me the most about these Cubs? I don't know. Real quick, there's a handful of things. How good they are without Schwarber. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was kind of expecting Schwarber to not necessarily carry the team, but, you know, to be launching balls into the Allegheny, putting balls on top of scoreboards. And really, it's like the guy's gone for the year and hasn't really made a dent in what we've done. Second is the depth of the bench. Last year, whenever Listella, oh God, I'm going to get a nasty tweet. Listella and Baez, those guys, I was kind of rolling my eyes last year thinking, oh great, here we're going to get a strikeout, we're going to get a ground out. And they're just kicking ass and taking names. Third is the walks. These guys are walking like it's no joke. And last year, anytime somebody got to the plate, I just had this nagging feeling that they were going to strike out. And what are they doing? They're not striking out. They're getting walks. And probably the most surprising is things like taking the Cardinals, sweeping the Pirates, but getting a loss to the Braves, the Brewers, Arizona, the Reds. I mean, it's just a head scratcher. It's going to be a fun year. Baseball's fun. Go Cubs.